Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Topp. I lost 135 pounds and drastically improved my whole family's health adopting a paleo lifestyle. My husband Matt, who happens to be the producer of this podcast, and I blog our recipes, successes, and struggles at paleoparents.com. Matt and I have authored two cookbooks, Eat Like a Dinosaur, a family-friendly recipe and guidebook for kids, and the upcoming Beyond Bacon, which is a paleo recipe book respecting the whole hog, nose to tail, due out in hardback July 2nd, 2013. We have a passion for family-friendly meals that are practical, affordable, and sustainable to the earth, as well as our long-term health.
And I'm Sarah Ballantyne. I was a scientist before becoming a full-time stay-at-home mom and the blogger behind thepaleomom.com. I'm also the author of the upcoming book, The Paleo Approach, available for pre-order now off Amazon and due out September 28th, 2013. Both my blog and The Paleo Approach are heavily focused on the autoimmune protocol. I also blog about the practical application of the paleo diet and share wonderful recipes.
Next up, News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip. Sarah.
Hey, Stacey.
I just got off my treadmill desk. I'm really resentful that I have to sit down and record this podcast with you.
I know. We totally need... I just got off mine, too. We totally need to find a way of, like, making the sound of us walking not come through on the podcast.
There is no way. I got mine off of Craigslist, and I think it's, like, 1984 treadmill. The boys, when we started up, they were like, what's that noise? I'm like, shh, that's the motor. You be quiet. It's a tenth of the cost of a new one.
Substantially less for it, though. So,
Basically, I figure if I use it and I like it, then I'll know if I want, you know, but I want to upgrade and have a nicer one, then at least I'll know that it's worthwhile to make the investment into a new one. But when I saw this one for a tenth of the price of what it would cost to get a new one, I'm like, no brainer. Yeah. So...
Yeah, and I sort of did, well, what I did, because I actually already
You already had one. Yeah, that's awesome.
So I had a treadmill that was actually pretty, high-end consumer-level treadmill that I bought before I got sick the second time when I was running marathons. And I got it because I was having a lot of joint issues running marathons. So I actually got it to do some of my speed work at home and some of my training runs because it has so much more cushion and shock absorption. And then it's followed me like over four cities, like across North America. And it sort of has seen sporadic use from time to time. But I mean, every time we move, we're like, should we bring the treadmill? And I'm like, but what if I want it someday? And
now that day has come.
It's true. It has gotten more use in the last like 3 weeks. I think it's been not quite 3 weeks since I got the desk to go around it. And I have probably tripled the miles that were on it. It's awesome. I really, really love it. Did you see that that post Liz from Cave Girl Eats put it up on her Facebook? It was from Aligned and Well, and it was she called the treadmill desk junk food walking.
Mm.
Did you see that?
Mm-mm.
She basically had
Just to be clear, you're not saying Liz said that. You're saying
not Liz. Liz
posted that this other person
posted
said that.
That was, and then another person asked me if I had seen the post that Liz referred to. It wasn't Liz. It was AlignedAndWell.com, and she, the woman from AlignedAndWell.com, likened it to junk food walking, and basically talked about how, you know, some of the issues with walking on a treadmill and how it's not as healthful as walking, and then there's some ways that you're moving your body that are not like natural walking.
Well, it's more helpful than sitting on my bum.
That was my point, because I mean, I think if you were using walking at a treadmill desk as your replacement for going out for a walk outside, that would be one thing. But for me, it's a replacement for sitting. And it is so much better for my body than sitting. And I've noticed a huge difference. Like last week, I only go to one yoga class a week now because of having to free up time to write the book. And last week was the first time I was able to do something new, like physically see, you know, an improvement in what I can do in a yoga class since I started writing the book. And the only thing that has changed, because I'm getting even less sleep now, the only thing that has changed is the treadmill desk. Mm. And I noticed, like, improvements in my core strength. I was able to do a full bind in lizard pose. Do you know what that one is?
Yeah, no. I mean, I don't know the name of these poses. I just follow what people do on Instagram.
Well, no one was taking pictures of me in class. But I it's been one of those, because my hips are really open. So lizard pose is a fairly accessible pose for me. It's a really deep hip opener and a really deep quad stretch. And I've never been able to balance in it before. I mean, I can get into it and I can get down on my elbows and I can get the really good stretch, but I've never been able to just lift up my hands and wrap them around my body and like lock them behind my back and actually balance like that. I don't know where that came from, but it was awesome.
Cool.
And then I was also able to do a tripod headstand, which I had no idea I could do. Like the last time I tried, it was nowhere close. So it was awesome.
I love inversion.
I do too. I really do feel a lot better after it. I'm kind of in love with my treadmill desk. I'm glad cool. You are too.
Yeah, I mean, I've had mine like 20 minutes, literally. And we got it, I think, around 5 o'clock. And we ate dinner. We came home. We had to carry it out of the car, which, by the way, I got in an extra wad today as well because Matt and I carried it from the person that we bought it from. And because it's made in 1984, you know, it's not light at all. I think it's made out of some sort of...
You know what? It'll probably last forever, though.
Yeah. Well, you were talking about shock absorption. I'm like, oh, is that something it's supposed to have? So we carried it up a flight of stairs from this person that we brought it from. Then we were kind of in a city area, so we had to park our car like down the street. So we carried it all the way there. Then we got home, and because we put it in the basement, we didn't want to carry it down the stairs of the house in the basement. We brought it all the way around the side of the house and into where it's set up. So by the time we were done, we had our heavy lifting. But so I got on it and I was like, let me try this out. And I checked email and I updated Facebook, and I only spent, you know, like 20 minutes on it or whatever. And I felt like I was going so slow. I was going a mile an hour.
Just that's how fast I go. I mean, just trying to get my weeks into it.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to get my bearings and, you know.
That works really well for me though, because I might write for like 3 hours straight, and like a mile an hour is sustainable and I can forget about it.
Yeah. I was totally able to forget. And when I was done, I thought, oh, it's going so slow. It'll probably be like a tenth of a mile, but I had done half of a mile and I was like, holy cow. I just did a half a mile while I was checking my email. Normally, like you said, this is not something I'm doing to replace regular exercising. I'm not going to stop CrossFitting, but I do not have the time to, you know, wake up an hour earlier and walk around the block because I'm not even sleeping half as many hours as I should be sleeping. So it's really awesome for me that I can do what I need to do while getting exercise. And, yeah. I think what you're saying though about being able to do more stuff is directly correlated and caused by your focus on posture. Because remember when you first got it, you were like, oh, I hurt the first couple of days, but then I got my posture down.
Yeah, because- no, I totally didn't think that you could slouch while walking, but apparently you can. So yeah. I have been really, I don't have to think about it as often now, but I'm really mindful to have a straight back with my,
but think about, you know, how
the
much
yoga shoulders, you yeah. know, back it down.
Think about how much more time you're spending on your posture, because most people, when they sit in a chair, they don't consider their posture and they're slouching and they're hunching. And so if you were doing that in a chair, not to mention the physical exercise that you're getting, but you're focused on your posture, which directly, you know, supports
well, it directly
your core.
Activates your core muscles. Yeah. And Yeah.
So that is, it doesn't surprise me at all that you saw improvements in yoga.
But it was cool.
I wasn't
expecting it. I had one day last week that I walked 8 miles.
Oh, nice.
Like cumulative throughout the day. I mean, it wasn't straight. I've realized that my treadmill starts to smell funny around the 3 hour mark.
Oh God, mine's probably going to explode.
It needs a break. It happened to be the first time. I can't remember what day it was last week, but I was like, what is that smell? And I thought at first that one of my cats...
It's like when you blend something
floor.
For too long. Is that what
yes,
it smells like?
It's that same hot motor smell.
Yeah.
Yeah. At first I was like, did one of the cats pee? And then I was like, I don't want to go like looking for where the cat pee is, because that's like not my favorite thing to do. But I have one like really old cat. So
okay.
We'll
it's getting way TMI
juice.
Right now.
Sorry. But yeah, no, it was the motor was getting hot. That's what it was.
Cool. Well, I'm excited to use mine this week, because I will essentially be finishing Beyond Bacon on the treadmill. You and I talked, this is just going to be a kind of touch base, follow up, catch up show.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a short show because Beyond Bacon is going off to printer on Friday. So,
oh my gosh, it's so crazy.
It is crazy. And there's a lot to be done to kind of finalize a book. Even though it's in the layout, there's, you know, a lot of errors. You need to do the index and the references and a resources page and the page numbers, because I kind of switched the ordering of things around once I saw pictures next to each other. All that kind of stuff needs to be updated, and it's like endless. And the amount, you know, it has to go through like 10 million edits, and even then I'm sure the minute it goes to print we'll find something embarrassing.
Oh,
you know,
always. There's always still mistakes and
yeah. So even though we have like, you know, half a dozen professional editors look at a book, it's a lot of words for everybody to look at every single thing. But you saw the book and you had nothing but wonderful things.
Oh my gosh,
it
is the most beautiful book. Like it's crazy beautiful. And I am not exaggerating. My mouth was watering the entire time I was flipping through it. Like, it was just like, I was like, apparently I need to go cook some of these recipes, because it was just amazing. And I've been like, I can't wait until when my book is done, I'm going to basically have a like Beyond Bacon, like cook-off.
And it's pretty autoimmune friendly. I mean, obviously
there's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's kind of how we eat. So, you know, there's a soup that is tomato based, and we basically made it and gave it to Amy, our photographer, because they're like, we don't eat this anymore. And there's a couple of like nut based treats, but there's nut free treats. There's, you know, several nut free and egg free things that people can make. And I just, yeah. Anyway, so there's a lot to do with the book, but I did send out a preview to a couple of close friends just to say, squee, oh my gosh, look, the book.
And you know what's cool about that? I got a preview.
Yeah. Not just a preview. I mean,
I've seen the book.
I mean,
it was awesome.
Don't try to use any of the table of contents.
I noticed
the page numbers aren't going to work at all.
Like, oh, I think everything's on page 26.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. That kind of stuff is, you know, obviously.
Do you actually have to put in all the numbers?
Oh, no.
Someone else does that,
the
right?
The publisher does that, yeah. But, you know, it's our job to, every single time it gets updated, it's our responsibility to look and make sure that, you know,
that's
we're okay with it. And
I am so nervous about that. I mean, granted, I'm about 3 weeks away from starting that phase, but I'm so nervous about it because I've heard from so many people that it's worse than writing. But I'm at that phase of writing where I can't imagine anything worse.
Yeah, you'll get there. You'll understand. I think, okay, so there's two things about it that are worse, just so people can understand where we, the authors that say that, are coming from. One, your baby that you've had complete control over is now in somebody else's hands. And so when you get back the edits, it's not just a matter of dealing with the edits.
It's
kind
of emotional.
Yeah. It's emotional to go through.
Like my wording of this.
Yeah. Because it's not just, I don't care if we missed a period or if we said, like, Matt and I both write different sections. And so a lot of the edits that come back from us are the voice isn't consistent and we have to go through and fix that. And I get that and I appreciate that. I appreciate a lot of things about the editing process. But when they come back and say things like, this makes no sense, and you've spent a lot of time trying to figure out something, make something make sense.
They're going to come back and say that about chapter 3 for me, which is like 85 pages.
Yeah. So that's the first part, right? Like dealing with that whole thing. And the second part is that this is the time at which you have a deadline to get your book to the printer. And if you don't make that deadline, then your book doesn't come out when everybody wants it to come out. And that's a problem, right? We want to get copies into reviewers' hands. We want to make sure that stores and Amazon can get stocked in time to ship it to people. And so you can't blow your deadline. Once you've kind of turned it in and we're like, okay, you have 3 weeks to get it to the printer or whatever the case is, that means that all those rounds of editing and all the things that I've talked about, dropping it in, looking at the whole thing, arranging it the way you want to arrange it, making sure that table of contents and page numbers and all those things are done, and the little things like indexes are really important to me. I got a lot of really positive feedback about Eat Like a Dinosaur's indexes being more useful than a lot of the cookbooks that people are familiar to. And that's because I took a lot of time to go through and make sure that the index was comprehensive, but not overly so that if you were looking up a lemon recipe, it wasn't every single recipe that contained a lemon. Like, that's a manual thing that you have to go through and check and do. And if you think about it, you have 3 kids, a blog, a full-time job, a podcast, and you're trying to make time for that sort of thing in 2 to 3 weeks. That's a lot of work.
That's a huge time commitment. I mean, I'm at the point where I'm at the every spare second is on.
Yeah.
Because I'm frankly not sure how I'm going to finish it.
And on top of that, our publisher, your and I's publisher, is on the West Coast. So he's crazy awesome involved in everything, and he does not know what office hours are. And so he works until he's exhausted and he goes to sleep, which is like 11 p.m. his time, which means he's emailing and contacting us upwards to 2 a.m. in the morning on the East Coast. So, because if he's in the middle of doing something, he'll often text or call to be like, hey, I want to make sure I understand what you intended here, because he's working through it. And then when we wake up in the morning, we have a file in our box that we need to deal with. So it's a lot. And I don't know that everybody understands that, not that they need to understand that, but when you hear specifically bloggers saying, I'm sorry, I can't give you new content. I'm sorry that I've fallen off the face of the earth, but I'm trying to finish my book. It's because it literally is a full-time job. Like, that's all my publisher is doing right now is the book. And here I am on the other side with another full-time job, 3 kids, the blog, and everything else that we're doing. So, you know, sleep, like I said, has become one of those things that, despite knowing is the worst thing for me to give up,
no,
disappears. And so, you know, that's why this treadmill desk is awesome, because I've been feeling guilty that I'm not waking up early and going for walks with Finn like I used to do a couple of months ago. He and I used to wake up early every morning and go on a walk together. And it was really special and awesome for me, and I miss it. And today, when we bought the treadmill home, the 2 older boys were fighting with each other about who could do it first. And so I'm really feeling like, I told Cole, when he's watching TV, he could get on the treadmill. Like, he only gets half an hour of TV time a day. But even at that, he was excited because the treadmill is in the same room with the TV. He was excited at the idea of being able to watch TV while being on the treadmill. And he was like, yeah, I can get extra exercise in. And that's, you know, awesome. So
that is very cool.
Hopefully next week I'll get some sleep, because once it goes off to the printer, there's nothing more I can do. And also, I mentioned this on the blog, but to our podcast listeners, we actually have taken on the bold jumping into the frying pan-ness of hiring an assistant. You know, we've talked before, we don't make a ton of money from the blog, but Matt and I decided we make enough money to support us having a little more time to do things that we love rather than doing stuff that we need to do. So part of the marketing is just emailing people like, would you like a copy of the book? And can I have your address and stuff like that? And, so we've hired Monica as part of our Paleo Parents team. Hi, Monica. 'Cause I know you're doing the show notes on this podcast right now.
Can I tell you something?
I know what you're going to tell me.
I hired Monica, too.
I know. Don't worry. I approved that. I referred her to you.
Yes, you did. I'm not taking her away from you.
Yes. So I'm hopeful there's enough Monica love to go around for everybody, but I think it's really important that, you know, I make it clear to people that we've kind of, you and I have both had this consistent message of taking care of yourself and not doing too much. We're both aware that we're doing too much right now.
Yes.
And trying to
protect our health as much as we can.
And so this treadmill desk and hiring Monica are honestly ways that I'm trying to protect my health. And so it's not enough. I know that it's not enough. But I'm glad that this, you know, part of finishing a book isn't forever. It's a short-term thing. And hopefully by taking some of the other precautions that I've taken, I won't completely tank myself and I'll be okay without an autoimmune flare and all kinds of problems next week when I emerge on the other side.
Hear.
So
my other side is a little bit farther away.
Yeah. But
my husband's joke is you can sleep when the book's done. Which is, it's a joke because I'm still making sure that I get like 7 to 8 hours sleep a night. But that's not enough for me, and I know that's not enough for me.
I cracked up when I texted the other night and your husband texted back and he was like, yeah, Sarah went to bed like an hour ago.
It was like
9:15.
I have to go to bed like really early just to recharge. So that was the night that I just Wednesdays are when I go to a yoga class, I cannot stay awake Wednesday nights. Like normally I've got a little bit of steam left in me and I can get some good writing in before the kid or after the kids go to bed, before I go to bed, but not Wednesdays. Yoga just totally resets my circadian rhythms, which is perfect, except I cannot stay awake Wednesday nights. So it's pretty typical for me on a Wednesday to go to bed at like 8:30. So that's what happened. It was my yoga day and I was all doing the tripod headstands and stuff.
It was pretty funny. That's all. Cause I was like, I mean, it was funny and so
but that
far
explains
the idea
the text from you last night that was like, are you awake?
Yeah. And you were like, and it was much later and you were like, yeah, of course.
Of course I'm awake. Yeah. Just Wednesday. If I make it to yoga, Wednesdays are, I just completely run out of energy. But in a good way, I'm looking after my body at least one day a week kind of way.
Cool. So,
So why don't we tell people what we're doing this week, because we're both pretty burnt out. We're doing kind of like a follow-up show. We've got a few questions that were related to things that we maybe missed the boat on or didn't quite know how to answer in some of our previous podcasts. And I thought this would be a good opportunity to kind of read some of those. We've got a little collection of them. Sound good?
I'm excited. I thought it was a really cool idea, and I'm glad that little to no work is involved.
Yeah. So, do you want to do like a quick science with Sarah too, or you want to just jump to questions?
Do you have something you want to cover? I mean, that's your work, not mine. It's up to
well,
you.
I do have like a short topic that is like a frequently asked question that I thought would be relevant to anybody who's interested in buying Beyond Bacon.
Sounds good to me.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys. Science. So today for Science with Sarah, I wanted to answer a fairly simple question, and that was, when we look at eating omnivores, so animals that naturally have a diet that includes a variety of foods. So that might be chickens, because their natural diet would include seeds and grass and berries and insects and grubs, and that makes them omnivores. And it's also related to pork, because pigs are naturally omnivores. Does it matter what they eat? And this is one of those questions that we get asked very, very frequently when people are looking to source pasture-raised chickens and pasture-raised pork. We often find that those animals their diets are supplemented. Even if they're pastured, they are still fed food, unlike grass-fed cows, which the only thing they eat is the grass on the pasture. Pork and poultry are often supplemented with feed that often includes corn, sometimes includes wheat, sometimes includes soy, sometimes includes sort of random other seeds. I know that the farmer I'm buying eggs from right now, he has a custom feed that's made with corn and sunflower seeds. So there can be a lot of other things thrown in, depending on the size of the farm. Those animals might be getting table scraps. So the diet of the family that are growing those animals will affect what kind of feed those animals are getting. So the question is, does it matter if those animals are raised on pasture and they have, you know, they're healthy animals and they have a good life? Does it matter if they're eating wheat if you are gluten intolerant? Or does it matter if they're eating corn? Does it matter if that corn's GMO? Does it matter if they're eating soy? And the reason why we worry about this is because with eggs, there is some research to show that there can be intact proteins from the diet of the chickens that can get into the eggs. And this has been shown specifically with some soy proteins, that proteins from the soy-based feed that are given to the chickens can be found intact in the eggs. So the question is, does that happen in muscle meats? And the answer is, there is no evidence that it does. There have been a few studies that have measured some proteins in animal meats, but not directly to answer this question. Sort of like they've got other questions to answer, and this is something that they do on the side. There have been no studies that definitively show that any proteins from the food are getting into the muscles. And this really makes sense, actually. So if you're thinking, well, how can that be? When you're talking about a healthy animal who has a healthy gut, then all of the proteins that they eat in their food should be broken down into individual amino acids in order to cross their guts and get into their bodies. And then they are reconstructed into proteins that they need to make their cells. So when this might not be true is if you're talking about unhealthy animals, like conventionally raised, and I hate the word conventionally raised because there's nothing conventional about concentrated animal feedlot operations, but conventionally raised animals may not actually have such healthy digestive systems. So if they have a leaky gut, then the proteins from their feed can hypothetically leak into their body. So there may be more of a concern with conventionally raised animals, although again, there's no studies to show that this happens. It's just from anecdotal evidence from people who say, well, there are people who are so allergic to corn that they have a reaction if they eat an animal who was fed corn. There's also the possibility that those reactions come from cross-contamination. So the answer to the question, does it matter what the animals are fed, what their diets are supplemented with? If you have a severe allergy to something that those animals might be fed, provided the animals are healthy and provided that they are butchered in a clean environment where you're not going to have any kind of cross-contamination, there should be no worry. There should be no trace proteins from that food in their meat. Does that sound cool?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. We get asked that question a lot, though.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that, I'm not pretty sure, I know for a fact that we not nearly as eloquently or in depth address that in Eat Like a Dinosaur. I mean, Eat Like a Dinosaur and Beyond Bacon.
You do. No, you eloquently, you're very eloquent in Beyond Bacon.
And our the one thing I would add to that I didn't hear you mention is to highly suggest talking to your farmer when you are buying happy pastured pigs about what their feed is. And a lot of them who are doing good farming practices will be happy to tell you what their feed is and where it comes from and how they support it and why they made that decision. The one thing to be wary of, however, is that sometimes animals are put on the pasture part-time, not full-time, and then they might be getting too much feed when they're not on the pasture of something like, let's say, GMO feed. And then again, even though they're pastured, they might, you know, be an unhealthy animal that then could cause problems to you. So, you know, just be fully aware and talk to your farmer about their farming practices and what kind of feed that they're having. And although you might feel uncomfortable inquiring, you are spending good money to get quality meat, and a good farmer with good farming practices will be happy to tell you all about his farming technique, if not invite you onto his farm to see yourself. So
I have asked many farmers about the feed of their animals, and none of them seemed to think that that was a strange question.
Yeah. Cool.
So let's do some of these follow-up questions then.
Yeah.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So our first follow-up is from Katie, who wrote to us after we did our last practical show and we talked about smoke detectors. Katie wrote, "Hey there, love all your stuff. Was just listening to your most recent podcast, and I might have an answer about the smoke alarm question. Mine goes off all the time when I cook at high temperatures, no matter what cooking fat I use, lard, coconut oil, whatever. I currently live in a fairly new apartment, but less than 6 months ago, I lived in a fairly large house. The smoke alarm never went off in the house, but goes off on a daily basis here. It was actually a joke between me and my man that one of us stands guard to fan any time we want our carrots or Brussels sprouts or squash to caramelize. I happened to mention it to a fireman I was waiting on at my restaurant, kind of as a joke, and I said my apartment must have something against well-developed flavors and caramelization. He told me that a smoke alarm that goes off at high temperatures without any smoke is just a sign of a cheap fire alarm and that it shouldn't do that. Maybe your listener and her sister just need to have her fire alarms replaced with a nicer version. I tried to complain to our landlord, but alas, they have not upgraded. Until they do, my man will just have to stand guard so I can get my carrots all nice and toasty. Again, love all your stuff and can't wait for Beyond Bacon to come out so I can keep feeding my pork addiction."
Yay. Thanks, Katie.
That was cool. That totally answered that question in a much better way than we did on that
I think
podcast.
We kind of bumbled along saying, I don't
like,
know.
Oh, smoking point, something, something. Yeah. That was a better answer.
Thanks, Katie.
Do you want to read the next follow-up?
What, you don't want to do this whole thing by yourself?
Well, I could. I can.
I got it. So the next follow-up is from Angela in South Bend, Indiana. "Hello, Sarah. I love the podcast and find your blog so helpful as I learn more about the paleo diet as a solution for my health. I actually have two somewhat related questions. The first, I want to re-ask you about Advocare Spark. I heard you answer a question on the last podcast, episode 30, and you said there was nothing anti-paleo about it. However, in addition to vitamins and caffeine, Spark also includes maltodextrin, citric acid, beetroot extract, natural and artificial flavors, sucralose, and silicon dioxide. Are these all considered safe? The second question is, when a label says natural flavors or even artificial flavors, what on earth is that? I read somewhere that it could be soy. Any thoughts or any sense of where to look for an answer? Thanks, Sarah, and I dare I say, God bless you for your work. I'm so grateful. Angela."
Thank you, Angela. That's really, really sweet. So the Advocare Spark thing, I guess when I looked up the ingredients list, they must have had two ingredients lists, like an active ingredients and an inactive ingredients, because I never saw these ingredients on the list. If people don't remember, Advocare Spark is an energy drink, and it's mostly just caffeine and some vitamins with apparently some fillers and some sugar in it. So the question is, like, are these all considered safe? Maltodextrin in North America is typically corn-derived, but it can be wheat-derived, especially in Europe, and I don't know exactly where these things are made. And so if it is wheat-derived, it can actually be contaminated with gluten and be a source of gluten contamination. artificial flavors can mean a lot of different things. I'll come back to that in a second. Sucralose, of course, is sugar. Silicone dioxide is probably one of those ones that people are like, that doesn't sound good. It actually, in terms of ingesting it, has not been linked with any adverse health effects. In terms of breathing it in, it has been linked to some serious problems for people who have workplace exposures. But for consuming it, if anything, it may actually prevent dementia. So it's probably in there to – it's usually added to things to thicken or change the color. Citric acid, I think – I mean, it's clearly not natural, but it's probably not harmful. Beetroot extract would be fine. So provided the maltodextrin is corn-derived and not wheat-derived, it's probably – still fine. Natural and artificial flavors can mean a lot of different things, but they usually mean chemicals that are esters that are, you know, the natural chemical that gives something a flavor, but then they can then manufacture it in a more like an artificial way to create large quantities of it. I typically, because I have an autoimmune disease and these kinds of chemicals really, really matter for me, shy away from anything that says natural or artificial flavors. So I guess not that I ever felt warm about a drink that was just purely large amounts of caffeine. I think there's much more enjoyable ways of getting caffeine, and I think caffeine in itself is not necessarily the best chemical to be ingesting. But I guess I feel now that it's not great, but I don't see a really obvious reason if this is something that people really, really love to avoid it.
I just wonder what value it's adding to someone's diet. You know, we talk a lot about seeking nutrients and consuming a nutrient-dense diet. And like you said, there are other ways to get energy, either from homebrewed tea, which has some antioxidant effects and stuff like that, or from kombucha, you can get energy. There are a lot of different things that I would say maybe look to alternatives to find an energy source, because this doesn't appear to be adding any value to anyone's diet. And I certainly see a couple of ingredients that are certainly detrimental, including maltodextrin and sucralose. So, I mean,
yeah, certainly not. Yeah. Especially when you look at something like the health benefits that have been associated with black and green tea, which have stimulants in them, and I would probably guess taste better.
Yeah. Add some honey to that, you get the benefits of, you know, raw local honey if you need something sweet. And I'm not saying that that's a health food, but it certainly at least adds nutrients and healthfulness to your diet rather than taking away from it. So.
Yeah. So, yeah. So let's do this follow-up from Lisa. Lisa writes, a few things. Wilderness Naturals makes an expeller-pressed coconut oil that does not taste like coconut or smell, which I guess is because we talked about
like the differences of green and gold and all that stuff in the show prior to her emailing.
And then she writes, I'm a fermenting freak, so I have to comment on the kombucha. Kombucha does not necessarily need black tea. It needs a tea from the Camellia sinensis family. So that could be black, green, or white, which is very useful information for anybody thinking about brewing their own kombucha.
I've become obsessed with Reed's kombucha. Have you tried it yet?
No, I've been making my own.
Oh, yeah.
You know what's interesting? I let it go 3 weeks, so it's like 10 minutes of work every 3 weeks. I'm only getting like 3 bottles, but that's kind of like what I'm going through every 3 weeks. I'm kind of in a sort of cool, it's not really hitting the spot the way it used to. So I'm almost mostly making it for my youngest daughter, because she still thinks it's like the best thing in the world.
Mm. Well, I drink 8 ounces of kombucha almost every day, and I have killed many a mother, SCOBY mother. So I've given up on trying my own, although I welcome gifts from anybody. You want to send me your homebrew, that's fine, but please don't tell me how easy it is, because it's not for everybody. It's just not for us. And so as a result, I have found Reed's kombucha, which I absolutely love, and it is not black tea based. It is, I believe, jasmine tea based, which is...
jasmine tea is a green tea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like...
The flavor is just so mellow.
Yeah.
But it actually has lower sugar, even though to me it tastes sweeter. Like, it's just, it's more mellow, and so the taste is less jarring, so to speak, and so...
It's not as acidic, I think. That might be why it tastes sweeter with less sugar.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Awesome. Let's do one last question. I'll read it. You got to read one. I'll read three.
Sounds fair.
This question is from Teresa from Windsor, California. And it's actually not specifically a follow-up on... a question that we answered in one of our podcasts, but it's a topic that we've covered, I think, in passing, and it's something very relevant to me for today. Teresa wrote, the other information that I read on other popular paleo sites include using coconut oil on a skin burn. Against all of my first aid training, I was screaming, no, maybe after treatment for burn, but do not put immediately after a burn. Oil seals the heat and can cause the burn to turn into a second or third degree burn. In our zealousness, there needs to be some caution when working with the general public. I guess someone was suggesting coconut oil for burns, which to me is really funny because I really badly burnt my hand this afternoon. And one of the first things my husband said was, maybe you should put some coconut oil on it.
Yeah, when Matt had that fireball a couple of months ago, I think I said the same thing. But he went and showered to cool the skin and, you know, stuff beforehand.
Yeah, my immediate first aid for burns is always cool water. And I've actually been doing, like, the kids' ice packs, because it's right on the palm of my hand. And I use my hands. So
yeah,
standing by the sink. Yeah, I was an idiot. I just had one of those moments where I was rushing to clean up after doing some food prep so that I could go and write. And I went to wipe down the stovetop, and I have just one of those... I don't know what they're called, you know, the flat stovetops?
Flat tops.
Mm-hmm. Flat top stove. And it was still hot because I had made a sauce. And I totally ignored the light. and I just wiped, like, the cloth, like, right over it. And the heat just went straight through and burnt my palm. So I've been doing a lot of ice packs. And I may do some coconut oil tomorrow on it, but I won't do it right away. I remember my mom when I was a little kid talking about, because back then it was to put butter on burns.
Mm.
And I remember her being like, no, butter's the worst thing. The oil actually, seals in the heat and turns it into actually makes the burn go deeper. And I can remember my mom being very anti butter on burns.
Fascinating.
I guess it's kind of the same thing.
I am no burn expert. That's for sure. But I'm sorry you burned yourself.
It happens. It's not the first time, and I'm sure it won't be the last.
Interesting.
I am surprisingly clumsy in the kitchen, actually. I actually injure myself a lot. It's not think something that everyone needs to know, but...
Matt is, too. But that's okay.
I tend to multitask, and I tend to push the boundaries of what I can actually reasonably do at one time. And it's all, you know... to be efficient, but yeah, I tend to get just getting too many things all at once. So then I have to rush something, and burns and cuts, and don't let me near a microplane.
Oh gosh, Matt has a mandolin, and he's like instructed to only use it at certain times with supervision and gloves.
Yes. And I have to say, like, it's as you know, as much as anybody who's used a mandolin knows how important that little guard thing is with the spikes that go in, and so that your hand doesn't have to go near it. None of us actually use it. Like, it's, I mean, I always start without
it. We use it. I don't know what you're talking about. None of us use it.
Well, okay. Well, none of us stupid people who get injured in the kitchen all the time. I mean, I just find it so awkward. So I will, what I typically do if I'm like slicing something is I'll, you know, when I feel like my hand is far away from it, I don't use it. And then as my hand gets closer, then I will switch and use it for the last little bit. Mandolins are dangerous. And yes.
So it's not just you doing stupid things. You want me to tell you about my day?
Yeah.
Okay, so I told you I got my treadmill desk.
Yeah.
I was supposed to get it this morning at 9:15 in the morning and completely forgot. I also had a baby shower that I needed to go to at 2 o'clock. And I'm sitting on the sofa in my jammies, working on the book at 11, scrolling through social media, and I see my friend who has the baby shower post a photo of herself and her belly in my Instagram feed. And I immediately am like, oh, shoot, I have to go to this party. And then I get to the party and I'm telling them the joke about how I almost missed it. And my friend's like, oh, you know, almost hurt my feelings. I thought you forgot about me. And the friend who's hosting the shower is like, so tell us about your treadmill desk. You got that this morning, right? My face, because at this point it's like 2:30, my face just literally like almost exploded. And I was like, I forgot about that too. And my friend's like, oh God, I'm glad it's not just me. I run to the other room. I call the lady. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Because I've been looking forward to it. I think I talked about it last week. I couldn't pick it up until Sunday. She was not available for me to pick it up until Sunday. And so the fact that I missed that window, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, she's like, oh, I did just put it back on Craigslist, but nobody's contacted me yet. So if you can get here in the next couple of hours, I'll hold it for you. And of course I had like just arrived at the baby shower. And so I'm like, okay, but I can't leave this party that I'm at. So I can't get there for 2 or 3 hours. And all kinds of drama. It is so unlike me to forget not one, but two important things in one day. I don't know what I was thinking where I had just told myself I was going to...
You're just thinking book.
I was going to stay in my pajamas and work on the whole book the whole day. Like, we had literally had a conversation with the kids where we were like, okay, today's jammy day. Like, we're just going to hang out. And Cole's like, we don't have to leave the house all day. And, you know, it was like this exciting thing. No, mommy has to leave the house, and I forgot that we have many things to do today, and just completely...
That's so funny. I had a similar, like, I didn't get out of my jammies until, like, almost lunchtime, and I was kind of resented getting dressed today. It was just one of those days where I kind of wanted to stay in my pajamas all day, but I hit the point where it just really wasn't going to be practical anymore. Sigh.
Cool. Well, I have much to do, so I'm going to hop off.
Yes, so we will go and work on our books.
Can we thank everyone for doing their awesome reviews this week? Because we hit... I haven't been checking regularly, but Matt told me we hit number 6, and he like sent us an image that we posted on Facebook where the Paleo View hit number 6 of all health shows this week because you guys went and reviewed it. And I can't thank you enough, and I want to show you that's exactly what we're talking about with the reviews in iTunes. You know, sometimes we don't mention it for several weeks, and then we get down below 50, and the minute that we ask you to please go and leave a review in iTunes, which you can do every week, then it helps other people find us, because once we're especially the top 10 or top 20, then when people
once you're on that first screen or first and second screen,
then other people looking for health shows might find us where they wouldn't otherwise. And frankly, if it's between us and Jillian Michaels or Balanced Bites and Jillian Michaels, like, we want them to choose a paleo show. So the more paleo shows we can get on the front page, the better. And we really appreciate everyone going and leaving a review. And if you could do that, you're in iTunes right now listening to the show, just go click the click the star and leave us a review, and we appreciate it immensely. Thank you very
much. Thank you. Yeah.
Cool. Well, until next week, when I will have turned in my book and hopefully be elated about that and not crying because something went awry.
And I will be 1 week closer to my deadline and probably 1 week more stressed, but that's okay. It'll be over soon.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. Have a great week.
Good night. Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
That's ridiculous.